Hello and welcome to episode 112 of Mise en Minis.
Hey, we got it.
And amusing.
Said with conviction.
Sorry, we can do better than that. Hello and welcome to episode 112 of Muse on Minis.
Musing and amusing.
Still less conviction on that part.
That was better.
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
All right.
Keith punted it.
This is John. I play Protector to Menoth, Minions, and Scorn. Those are the ones I'm claiming for now. And Convergence to Cirrus when the corollary comes out.
I was this close to complimenting you. Yeah. This close. I was opening my mouth.
Yeah. Didn't we have a rule about only saying what we're actually playing now versus the list of everything
what
we own?
We are currently playing, yes.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
This is John, and I play... Okay.
No, he's not currently playing anything.
I do play a little of Epic Civi. All
right, this is Lance. I play Kator.
This is Crump, and I play Circle.
This is Chad, and I play Troll Bloods.
This is Keith, and I play Crix and Morvana.
True.
Every time somebody says Morvana, I still think of Lance's stupid song.
Yep.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Every time someone says Earthbreaker.
You think of Josh going, Earthbreaker.
No, I just read it as Earthbreaker.
He has a fantastic video idea that me and Colin are going to do with him. That's going to be awesome when that model comes out. So
all right.
Look for it.
I'm not ordering that model then for you guys.
Yes. Tell him that you have and that it's coming. And then
forever.
To him.
It didn't come in, sorry. He doesn't listen to this podcast, right? So he won't know the plan.
We should be fine. We should be fine.
Assemble it and use it as a doorstop.
Oh.
Nobody comes in here.
Or just like take a video of you running it over it with your car. Like it finally came in, I assembled it for you, and then I realized I owe you a few, so
no, it should be like...
Or turn it into like a toilet roll dispenser. Just like put toilet paper on its arms.
You should paint it like a Tonka big rig and then give it to some little kid to play with in a sandbox.
And then take a picture?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it will for sure be covered
really well
with like...
Have it stand up to a kid playing in a sandbox.
Yeah, it's not going
to... It doesn't have to stand up.
It's going
to
have... Yeah. It's going to have detachable arms and legs really soon. And not attachable, just detachable. Anyway, what do we want to talk about today?
Probably should have talked about that before we started.
Yeah. Well, we have a couple, like Josh suggested a really good topic for new players about unpacking your army with an eye towards scenario and how to, you know, basically the things that you think about, like not running into gun rages or potentially running into gun rages depending on the composition of the enemy force in front of you. And but tying that in with scenario, because we've talked about threat ranges before,
mm-hmm.
and we've talked about being range dominant and range submissive, but I'm not sure we've talked about that in regards to, okay, how do we tie this in with SR 2013?
Yeah, I mean, we've said it before, but a lot of things have changed with SR 2013. Like being range dominant does not win you the game like it did in SR 2012. It's like, haha, I totally outshoot you, and it's like, yep.
You and I actually played a game.
Yeah, we played a game that illustrates this point pretty well. Because you held yourself in reserve with a screen in front of all your guns, and you were definitely ahead in the shooting stuff to death race. But then scenario caught up, and two turns later, I was able to dominate for a win.
Mm-hmm. So stupid Morvana and her light cav move. That's so frustrating.
Cha-cha!
Yeah.
I mean, she could have also just run. But she runs 16 inches.
Details.
You have to have a pretty solid plan for how to go about, especially if you're planning on shooting.
It's one of the reasons why I think we're not seeing Epic Lilith right now is Legion doesn't have super stalwart stuff to put in and hold zones by itself that isn't a significant point expenditure.
They could take Gatorman Posse?
I guess, yeah. So you might have to do something a little different. I guess Epic Lolo with Gatorman Posse would look really weird.
Yeah. Yep.
But it's...
Angels with Tenacity are pretty...
They are pretty good. I agree with that 100%, but that's also a 9-point investment and can also sometimes be trivially removed. Just depends.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
If the list has Victor Pendrake.
Right? I mean, more lists should have that guy. That guy's actually super sweet tech. I feel like.
Agreed.
And I don't see him that much. I think we picked that tip up from Billy, right? From Texas.
I started playing him before that.
Okay.
Anyway.
So, continue. What was the exact topic? What do we want to talk about?
We want to talk about how in SR 2013, it's changed for new players. It's kind of changed the rules a little bit in how you play your units, because typically you wouldn't run your units into the teeth of somebody's threat range, typically. But SR 2013 actually kind of forces you to consider doing that, where 2012 didn't necessarily force you to do that.
Sometimes. I think deploying is actually much, much more difficult. And I'm not probably the best person to talk about this because... Or maybe I can talk about how I've been doing it and how it's been screwing me. I think you just have to really, really think about what your list is designed to do, and you have to do that for each scenario. You can't just sort of come up with a generic... Like, the way that I used to do it, I was just sort of coming up with a generic plan. I'd be like, well, I'm going to throw these guys forward. I'm going to have this stuff following up behind it. And then my general plan is going to be shoot what I can with this and do what I can with that. And, you know, I would have some sort of general plan set in place for each of the components of my list. Whereas now I have to think about it specifically towards each scenario. With each list, actually. So it's much more complicated. It's much more work.
Yeah, the 2013 packet has... It demands more of you than the 2012 packet did.
Because what I found is when I go in with these generic plans now and I realize that, you know, some scenarios are not at all like other scenarios. And if you go in with a generic plan that's not tailored specifically towards the scenario you're specifically playing at that point in time, you can just... automatically lose.
Yeah, like in my game with Keith, one thing that I identified, I gave him 2 points for free, basically.
That's real bad.
What's that?
That's real bad.
Yeah, I could have given him 1 point for free instead.
Unless you have a backup plan that prevents him from ever scoring again.
Right.
Did you have one of those?
Yeah.
Did you?
No. Actually, yeah. I gave him 3 points.
Because like some Menoth lists specifically like can do that.
Yeah.
With things like with those infuriating things
like zealots,
the book and the zealots and yeah. errants and stupid seneschals,
knight,
exemplar,
unkillable duder.
I've seen that happen before too, where like people might give up a couple of points and then, but they're like, that's fine, especially in a death clock scenario or a death clock situation. It's like, that's fine. Like, I'll give up a couple of points because I have this backup that's going to like I'm going to gain position by giving up points, and then I'm going to have this backup that's essentially going to stall out the entire rest of the game.
So, like, if we get into talking, well, we may get into talking about my Epic Savvy list. We may dojo that if we have time. But I'm really coming around to putting Zealots back on the list and taking the TFG out, even though TFG are amazing with set defense and Holy Ward. Like, yeah. They're really, really good.
Agreed.
But Zealots are so much better with a gun line where you have to buy an extra turn because they buy you that extra turn of shooting that you need bought in order to compete in SR 2013 because they just, like, people do good. They remove one or two here, two or three there, you know, on their mini feet, Greater Destiny turn, but they can't ever, I very rarely have somebody actually successfully dig them all out and, you know, remove them all out of the zone so they can score.
It's like one caster in the game that can do it, and then he's spending his feet to kill 8 points.
Yeah.
Is that Gatsby?
No, Pete Kruger.
Well, Gorton does it too. Pretty good.
I think Gatsby can. Well, I guess if there are no spelling, then never mind.
Yeah, he's got to roll like eights or... They're based on what?
No, I mean, 12? Gatsby can definitely kill them all, but they still bought me my turn.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a turn where they can't score because they're still... I mean, they're all corroded and they all eventually die. But
I'm talking about his Prime Gatsby's feet.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But if they're spell warded,
yeah.
It's difficult.
Then he can't really.
Right. Yep. But anyway, so often when you go to deploy in SR 2013, most people have like a single tar pit, and I'm actually kind of wondering if double tar pit might be better in some scenarios because you have to range so far out.
Part of the issue is there's a lot of factions that don't have two good tar pit options.
Double warders.
Yeah, I'm not sure I agree with that.
Or having tar pits that actually do business. Like, are you taking enough business out of your army by trying to tar pit that way?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. And it's just a thought that I've recently been having because of the way scenarios stretch my single unit lists. Like, I play a lot of jacks in a single unit. In certain scenarios, I'm just like, ugh, this is really bad for me. I've got to put heavies in places where they can get charged by things, where dice spikes will completely changed the tenor of my game. And I'll like it.
I've been kind of debating that idea with my Butcher 3 list, having the Iron Fang, Black Dragons, and Boomhowlers. Like, do I want to replace that with something else that tar pits just to have more business in the list? Or, I mean, am I really sacrificing something by putting Boomhowlers in there, even though I feel like he does a lot for them?
Although, I'm going to say Iron Fang Pikemen, if you're using them as a tar pit, that's fine. They're a good tar pit, mm-hmm. but they also do work.
They
Those
do.
Guys are POW 13.
No, I'm not saying they're not. Yeah. They're kind of the ones that they're my tar pit that does business, whereas the Boomhowlers may or may not, depending on...
Yep. And the nice thing about... A lot of times when you get into those situations where you feel like you need two tar pits, the second one can be... You can allocate them such that you've got your main tar pit, like Boomhowler. You're like, Boomhowler, you're always a tar pit. Pretty much nothing in the game that removes you trivially.
Right.
Almost nothing.
Yeah.
There's a couple situations going into where you're like, oh, crap. Like a blood hag ran up on me and a bile thrall went off and I'm parasited and they're all gone. Every single one of them is gone. Crap. But most of the time they're fine. And then your secondary tar pit can be a lot of different things. It could be a defense-based tar pit. It could be an armor-based tar pit. It doesn't have to be that all-purpose, like, super tough, never-die tar pit. Because you can be like, all right, Boomhowler's going to go this way towards the more difficult to contest. And this area that just needs to be held, but is going to be in a... Because it's always one of the places you need to be is much more secure for you. It's usually never like you have to range out into somewhere awful and range out into somewhere else awful, because that would be an unbalanced scenario where you're playing into your opponent's favor. And none of them are like that. The closest one to needing like two whole separate armies is Outflank. But that one, you can kind of bridge the gap in the middle and use one tar pit to kind of catch both zones. So most of the time, it's going somewhere far out and then holding back. And you can support that secondary tar pit a lot better. So that, like, Nis Hunters fit that purpose perfectly well. Like, they'll be able to sit in there and shoot out and still affect the game while being defense 15 and difficult to remove.
Sure.
Yeah, which is why I think Striders and Legion are actually pretty good for that purpose as well.
Yep,
sure.
Mm-hmm. And they tack on having stealth as well.
Yep, Def 15 stealth troops that just contest. You need stuff that contests that is not trivial to remove.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's one of the reasons why we can keep coming back to 2013. We've talked about it a lot, and we'll probably continue to talk about it until the SR 2014 beta comes out. It's just that, like Chad said, none of the scenarios play the same. So we can talk some about general rules, but you really have to have, like, the lists that you play need to be flexible. You have to be able to play them in a flexible manner to adapt differently to each of the scenarios, or build lists with kind of a whole new plan in mind. Like how we were talking about having to jam into your opponent's threat ranges. When I noticed that was happening in SR 2013, that's part of the reason that I've taken such a shine to Epic Denegra recently, is because that's part of her game plan. It's just like, I'm just going to run into their threat ranges.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to make that happen at some point. I'm going to run in and try to engage things and feed on them from reach where they can't do anything to me. I'm going to buy myself an alpha that way, as well as scenario pressure. And that's part of her average plan that works very well in conjunction with what happens in SR 2013.
That's actually why I think I've had a lot of success with High Reclaimer this year, is he's doing it slower, in a slower manner than Denegra is, but that guy just never gives up ground, and he moves forward every turn. And it's sort of an inexorable wave that is going to come across. And I also have Zealots, so they buy me turns for his slow army to get into the position where, you know, you just put so much scenario pressure on that they just can't. They don't want to put stuff in front of the army, because anything that's in front of that army just dies. And they, you know, can't score early points on me because of the Zealots that are smoked and then come out for a turn. Like, that list is a really good scenario list for that purpose. And it's designed to go forward, which a lot of my lists in 2012 were designed to go forward and then backwards, which you could get away with, which is just not working this year. So there's no sandpapering. It's very difficult to do. So I guess in relation to new players, and this has kind of gotten into a list design standpoint rather than an unparking your army standpoint, but you have to identify...
Unparking your army.
Unpacking your army. Parking your army, unpacking your army. But I think in relation to 2013, you really have to think a turn ahead or a couple turns ahead in a lot of those scenarios, because it's not just where my guys have to be this turn. It's where they have to be a turn from now, or maybe even two turns from now. Like, how are they going to weather? And it's a lot of, it's a lot to think about.
Yeah, I was going to bring it back to unpacking the army too, just because that's, I feel like that's been relevant to the game that games that I've been playing lately, especially at the WTC. Especially for scenarios like incoming, which is the one we were talking about a little bit ago.
Yep.
The two lateral zones and the two
objectives.
Centralized objectives. You need to be really careful about how you deploy yourself in that game, because you want to be able to range. You want to be able to send stuff to your zone, but you really want to be able to reach into their zone or threaten their zone so that they can't just camp their caster in it. And especially if they're, you know, threatening to score first, mm-hmm. if they have the second turn advantage or the second player advantage for scoring first. So that the nuance in deploying your troops there becomes a really big deal. Like the game that I was playing in the WTC, where I deployed my Fenblades towards my own zone, and my scattergunners and my burrowers towards the enemy zone. If I'd put the Fenblades, if I'd put everything towards their zone, and then I could have had, but not so towards their zone that I couldn't have had models like run over to my zone if I needed them to. But then that would have been much more, it would have been much more difficult for him to start that scoring process, because he would have been much more threatened.
Yeah.
You know, if he's going to put his caster in range of a bunch of Fenblades to be charged, then that's a good position for me. But I don't give him that, so then he gets a really free and easy, you know, oh, I'm going to start scoring, and now, you know, there's pretty much, just because of the way the timing works out, like, there's nothing you can really do to stop it. So, identifying that early on is really, really important. And if you can look at, if you're deploying second, and you can look and see where they deployed their army, if they're, like, all in on one zone, you know, you can kind of counter-deploy to try and stop them from doing their, you know, it's a lot more dynamic than it used to be, is I think what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, there's a lot more to think about. It's not, I know in 2012 we used to give the advice that if you wanted to, you could run your entire army through your zone and push into your opponent's zone, and that worked on a lot of scenarios in 2012.
Zones are a lot farther apart nowadays.
They are. They really.
The reason that worked so well in 2012 is because there wasn't, you couldn't score your own zone.
Yeah.
Then. So sitting in your own, the only purpose to sitting in your own zone was to prevent your opponent from scoring. So it didn't create any pressure. So you had the time to move through your own zone to make sure your opponent didn't score, and then range into theirs to try to score yourself. Now, if you take the time to push through, to put a presence in your own zone and try to move through that way, you're adding distance to the how you need to travel. And in the meantime, your opponent can start scoring their own zone and putting significant pressure on you. Yep, and that's that thought.
Yeah.
I really thought there was more exposition going to come out of that. But
and
stop short.
Yep.
So one of the other things I've noticed. that leads me to another thought about how going first got stronger again this year. Going first, I remember feeling like going first or second was mostly, for the most part, equally fine last year. Unless you were in, like, a serious gunfight, you wanted to go first so you could control the threat ranges a mm-hmm. bit more. But going first or second last year, either way was mostly fine, because you could play pretty passively as the second player if you needed to manage those threat ranges.
Yeah, there was a lot of games where I moved up, like, 3 inches on turn two.
So both players being forced in means that the first player has significantly more control over the threat ranges. Additionally, with the scenarios all being skewed in a particular manner, like a close zone and a far zone, creating imbalance on the table that requires different things. Like, for example, you know that strong tar pit needs to get to the far zone. So you can predict your opponent's deployment.
You should be able to.
As the first player, if you already have an idea of what your opponent's deployment is going to look like, you can counter-deploy as the first player, which is something that's an advantage traditionally granted to the second player. But if the scenario is dictating your opponent's deployment, and we're definitely out of the new player zone here.
Yeah.
But if the scenario is dictating your opponent's deployment, you as the first player can then, if you can identify that, you can counter-deploy before they even get to set up. And then they'll realize, like, oh, I need my boom howlers to be, oh, God, look at that. That's the unit that's going to have Bloodthorn on them. I'm playing against, like, those are Bloodthorn Striders coming across the table. And they're going to, well, they don't have to, bad example, they don't have to deploy right away. But so anything, it's like, okay, boom howlers are coming across the table from me over here, so I want whatever it is. I'm Epic Butcher. I've got my Iron Fang Pikemen that I'll threat them with.
Yeah,
Silence of Death. I've got my Blood Witches set up across from them, and
yeah, you just have your Blood Witches deployed across where the boom howlers are going to be, so you know the Hag is going to be there to counter the thing that makes them tar pity, which is that 4+ tough. Otherwise, they're really not. They're pretty unremarkable when you take that away. They go down really fast.
Epic Grim is just pointing where they're going to be. Like, yep, there's going to be boom howlers right there.
Or if your tar pit isn't boom howlers, if it's something like the Black Dragons, you set up your snipers across from that location ready to go, or you set up your
it doesn't have to be Cator specific, but I appreciate the examples.
Or Crick's example, if you're looking across at a possible shield wall, you set up like Warwitch Sirens in that direction, something to cause corrosion,
or Satixus Raiders
don't give a crap, right, about shield wall.
Yeah.
So, and if you can get yourself favorable deployments and control of the threat ranges from the first player position, the fact that you don't score first is not enough to offset that anymore.
No.
The fact that you don't score first and that they get a choice of table sides is no longer a significant enough advantage. So I think going first has gotten significantly stronger this year, particularly in the asymmetrical scenarios, because they dictate oftentimes how your deployment needs to go in order to play the scenario successfully.
Sorry, Lance, this tip is not going to help you any, but...
That's fine.
Anastasia DeBray probably should come back out and see more play.
Why can't we take her?
Why?
Why can't trolls take her?
You can ephemery.
Plus one to go first. It's one of those things where plus one to go first is good enough in SR 2013 that looking at theme lists that provide that benefit also gives you some advantage. That's one of the reasons why Harbinger is so good this year, is her feat is kind of like going first no matter what, often in a lot of games.
She does go first.
It lets her go first twice.
Right.
That's so broken.
Which is really bad.
I posit a question. If we took all the money that Cator spent on the conquest and just gave it to Anastasia DeBray,
no, she wouldn't do it.
Could we give Anastasia and the Piper? Can we get both?
No, you killed her family.
I don't care. It's millions of dollars.
What's the Cator currency,
actually? They spent way more on the Behemoth than they did on the Conquest.
Yeah, which was...
That's like
somewhat.
It's like Josh and Keith and I were, like, shooting the crap, like, late at night, and we were talking about how we'd be the best military generals in the Iron Kingdoms if we lived there. Because we'd be like...
All right, you people with guns, throw those swords out. Here's walking sticks.
It'd be like, walking sticks for everyone. And it is hereby outlawed to kill any... bagpipe player or whatever.
Yeah. The family of any bagpipe.
That is punishable by death.
So then the...
And then if it happens, like, the, you know, general of the army, like, personally goes to their house and he's just like, we're so sorry.
Yeah.
We're so sorry.
The guy that did it,
here's
kill him yourself.
Yeah. Wait, here's a ton of money. We just granted you a bunch of land. We're so sorry. We're so sorry.
So is Chris's play to then have every unit and soldier in his army carrying bagpipes?
I mean, one of them would learn how to play, right? Presumably. They'd be like, Polka lesson. Polka will never die.
Also, you're just like, Dire Troll. Shield.
Look at Mulg. See what he does? Do that.
Yeah. Also, the shield.
Yeah, and here's a shield.
Here's a tree, and here's a shield. You now have reach. And you have a shield.
Now you will rule the planet.
God, imagine an Earthborn that had two shields.
Yeah, I'm doing.
You know,
right,
I'm going to do one better.
Which is
on
why
that.
I have a huge boner.
And that's why Crumb backed away from the table. Yep. But no, I think we could do the one better. We could strap bagpipe players to the arms of the Dire Troll, so nobody would take a swing at them. Right. And somebody should mod that right
away.
That's
some serious meta game.
I know.
Anyway, I can't remember what else. There were some other good ones, but
anyway,
seems pretty sweet. Back on topic, from a standpoint of unpacking your army, so deployment has become, like you said, Chad, has become extremely, extremely important. You also, because you have to know how far up the board you have to get on turn, a turn ahead of where you're at. You can't not move up far enough the first turn. And I see that mistake get made a lot, where people are like, well, I can be just outside of their walk and shoot ranges, so I'll just move up a little bit. And then they're so far on their back foot for a scenario play that they're never really in it. And the reason why they're never really in it is because they didn't run far enough forward on turn one. And I'm actually guilty of that, too, because it's just my conservative play.
You do need to walk into some people's walk and shoot ranges. And then sometimes doing that even, so this is something that I've noticed, it's that happened to me a lot. Because like I said, I've not been super successful with the scenarios this year. Sometimes when you run forward into people's walk and shoot ranges, and I'll notice that they'll take those walk and shoot options, and they'll kill some of your stuff. Sometimes they'll even kill a lot of your stuff. They'll kill everything that's in threat range. But then I'll look at the table and I'll be like, well, the fact that they didn't run on their turn.
Yeah, they didn't run our charge is good for me in scenario.
Like, I lost a lot of stuff, but they're really far back.
Yeah.
You know, and now I can jam them really hard with my even, you know, harder to kill things or whatever. And that, you know, that, like I said, that doesn't happen a lot. But sometimes even the flip side of that is sometimes you'll run into, you'll just give them all the juiciest shots and the juiciest targets that you know, can possibly think of. And you'll just, this is going to be such a bad turn for me. And then they'll activate their shooting unit and they'll go, I'm going to run. And you're like, okay, yeah, good call, actually.
Yeah.
You know, like, they just don't take the shots because... position, I mean, is that much more important this year.
That happens with Keith all the time with his Denegar 2 list, right? That disposable unit of Satixus Raiders is like, blah, 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 like just in your face. And you're like, I got to kill those guys. So all
and
your
people
guys
are like, I'm going to aim. And I'm like, yeah.
Good choice, sir. Like,
oh, no.
But I mean,
they're going to die.
Even advancing off your deployment has suddenly set up a situation where you are 16 inches onto the board, about to get locked for two turns with the feet, and you're only 16 inches onto the board, and you're just like, this is really bad for me.
I tried replicating that in Circle, and then I found out that blood trackers are only FA1. They're like the only unit that's like that in the game. It's so freaking weird. They're like the only unit that has a UA that's FA1. Like, most units that have a UA are more than FA1.
I don't know about that.
I'm not even sure why it's relevant.
I don't know.
It's every time something's unique, it's interesting.
I guess.
Are Striders FA1?
I know there are.
I'm pretty sure there are two.
I know there are theme forces that...
Why aren't Burrowers
FA2? I'm pretty sure they're FA1.
There are plenty of good reasons.
Oh. Name one. All right, you're done.
He didn't name one. This should happen. Yeah. You have a half a second. Go.
Cannot wait till they have a UA.
Burrowers?
Burrowers?
I don't think that's ever going to happen.
Yeah. Team effort.
No.
Sploosh.
That cannot happen. Oh, my gosh. That'd be terrible. Man. Terrible. Terrible. Awful.
No quarter would be pretty good on them, too.
Yep. Yep, 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 yep.
Or
I don't know, just
actually, the mini feat that I would want for them is
burrow again,
dig again.
Yeah,
just never. No, just never
and
come
up. Be called. We'll dig our way out.
We'll just dig our. even better would be like do it Blood Witch style, and at the end of their activation, they dig.
Oh my god!
Strider's
like charge and dig,
charge, make attacks. And we're gone. And now there's and move the burrower marker. Just kill yourself now. It's fine.
Striders are.
No, this is not okay. This is why you guys aren't game designers, by the way.
Oh, man. In case you were wondering. Would be money.
You guys could be so game designers for 40K.
God, I want to see that in action. Like, just them coming out of the ground, just attacking people, taking heads off, and then just diving back into the ground again, like Tremors monsters or something like that.
It's like Scrooge McDuck and his money bag.
He's just like...
Striders are also FA2. I just looked it up.
Hmm? No, they're not.
Well, it is War Room, so, you know, I could be wrong, but... Blighted Nish Striders, Field Allowance 2...
Zealots, boom.
I mean, they're...
Zealots are FA3.
They're attachment.
No, they're not. They're FA1. Nobody fact-check that. I'm right.
Nobody bring more than one ever.
About what?
Zealots are FA3.
I'm perfectly fine with people bringing more than one unit of Zealots. As long as there's never a theme force that permits another monolith bearer.
What if there's just like, no, Vindictus gets a new theme force and it's just like, Zealots become FAU.
Unlimited.
Or Zealots and Zealot UAs become FAU and you're just like...
I'm pretty sure the correct answer then would be 8 unit of Zealots with FA. Or however many you can take.
Yeah, it's just as many as you can take with monolith bearers and then you're just like, and these two are unkillable, go. And now these two are unkillable, go.
And eat 20 bombs.
No, it's really funny is you engage all these guys, they're like, all right, well, they're invulnerable. The guys behind them come up and throw bombs on just all over, just saturate the entire area, and then those guys move forward and kill all your stuff, and it's just bad. Or they walk out of combat.
It's fine. I'll be underground.
We'll dig our way.
Somebody bring out the depth charges. What?
They're always right here. Just drop it.
Could you imagine?
It's like Bugs Bunny.
Could you imagine? Like the Earth? Does the Earthbreaker then get to shoot at them underground?
It should.
Yeah,
right?
Torpedoes, right?
Torpedoes go under.
They should have a rule where the Earthbreaker and only the Earthbreaker can target the little burrowing token, the little periscope.
Yeah. Actually, you know what would be pretty hilarious is I just have this thought of this, like, cartoon moment where, you know, these burrowers are all underground, like, hey, what do we do next? And then a torpedo just goes, like, right by their eye level, just, like, through the cavern, shoots right by them, and they're like, whoo!
No, actually, I think it should go the other way around. I think burrowers should be able to parry torpedoes.
Yeah.
if the line of attack of a torpedo passes within 5 inches of the burrower marker, you can just sacrifice one of the burrowers in the no torpedo.
You're like, all right, I'm only going to unburrow 9 of them.
I think there should be a new Merc solo based off of Bill Murray from Caddyshack. Mm-hmm. And you could just flood the tunnels so that they have to come up. Or plastic explosive animals of, like, burrowers or something.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, no.
And it would stop, like, the hell divers. It would stop the burrowers, whatever else burrows. It's just a specific counter to just them.
And it's just a guy wearing golf cleats with a hose.
Yeah, exactly.
We have literally jumped the shark.
Yeah. I don't literally... see a shark.
Yeah, John misusing but, again, okay. The word literally.
Technically, literally means figuratively now.
No, it doesn't. No, it does not.
You can look it up online.
You keep using that word.
I did not think it means what you think it means.
But this episode is going to end with that song, so it's going to be fine.
What?
Oh, my God.
This song from
You're I may already have it.
I was wrong. I've been sitting in a room. I was wrong. Before someone fact checks me, there are 2 units in the entire game that are FA1 and have UAs.
Hold on.
One of them is Blood Trackers.
One of those Blood Trackers, the other one. Adrian Skirmishers?
Nope.
Boss. They're pretty sure they're
It's
FA1.
A unit that sees play in like 98% of the lists.
Blood Witches.
No, those are not FA1. 98% of the list.
Zealots.
Yes, 98% of the list that the factions take. I'm making that number off the top of my head.
Well, that's so unlike you.
But it's probably a pretty accurate number.
With the UA?
Creelstone.
Creelstone.
Oh. Oh, yeah.
Boom. I knew it all along.
Just sitting here like, Blood Witches? It's not in my faction, right?
Yeah, I like how you got it when he started pointing at you. Like, yep. You're like, oh, wait, he's pointing at me. Why is he pointing at me? And so what do I have that's... you can just, like, literally see the gears and all of a sudden, ta-da!
Would double Creelstone ever be good?
I don't...
It was in Mark 1 when you could have the auras not stack but overlap.
I can see it.
And by that, I mean... Because
you
the auras would
touch my N plus armor,
but they wouldn't. But they wouldn't stack because one would overwrite the other.
Mm-hmm.
So you would have one with like 10 focus on, or 10 fury on it or whatever with this giant aura, and that one would be like the +2 armor or whatever. Or usually it would be Spirit Chaser because that was just better than +2 armor in Mark 1.
Yeah.
And then you would have a really tiny, and you could only do this in games where, you know, it was 2 caster games where your field allotment was doubled.
Sure.
But then you would have a really, you would have another Creelstone that was just like following around like the core of your army. That you
the command module.
Yeah. And that would have like 1 fury in it, and it would just be don't touch my stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So then it would be like, all right, all this stuff is plus two armor, and all this stuff can't be ever moved or replaced or whatever.
This little group in here can't touch that.
That's really, really, like, corner case, though.
Hmm.
I can't see you being able to... I mean, my very first thought was, it would be pretty cool to be able to spread the aura out, but then I'm like, you can't really fuel two.
No.
It would be really hard.
Well, I mean, you can only take two if you have two caster games.
No, I'm saying if they were FA2.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm not sure how you would ever get two auras up to be big enough to be relevant. Like,
that's why
be,
they need a weapon attachment that lets them take fury directly off of war beasts.
Oh,
that'd be so good.
My God.
For those guys. Or even an alternate UA.
It could be like these little guys with like syringes. They like just suck the fury out of the war beasts.
What about
inject it right into the creel stone?
What about an alternate UA though that would force you to give up the bonus auras?
That'd be really interesting.
Yeah,
that
because then you'd be like, I get really good fury management.
Really good fury. I mean, the thing is, like, that would open up a lot of design space. I think that'd be actually good design.
The creel stone was my hope for what that would be. That would become Troll's fury management. Into even Mark II, I think, is one of the things I was hoping to see was Trolls to get some fury management, and that they would get it, and that it would be the creel stone.
I think like some lists would be like my Madrek list. I probably wouldn't take like I probably would still take the Elder, but Doomshaper would obviously Doomshaper would be all over that. I feel like
mm-hmm. Yeah, he would definitely take the because he has enough magic weapons.
Yeah,
because that's like the main thing you're losing out on. Like the strength is obviously good, but. Trolls don't really have a large access to magical weapons.
Just open
anything
up a lot
to
of
get them off the immunity to continuous effects would be fine with me.
It would open up a lot of design space too. Like Gunnbjorn would probably be able to do a lot with like a creel stone that could take fury off of war beasts.
Oh yeah, that'd be really good.
Yep, it'd be interesting.
He's just got two bombs.
Privateer press. Think about it.
So when it comes out, they're going to be like, "We already thought about it."
Yeah.
Sorry,
that idea a while ago.
Sorry, I'm so excited.
I'm fine with that.
I want some new. I mean, we. I guess. Are we done talking about scenario? I feel like we're kind
seems
of
seems like it. We haven't talked about it for like 20 minutes now.
I'm just really looking forward to when we start seeing spoilers from the new book. And I know we saw the new House Guard dude, right? That grants fearless to his guys.
We saw that he exists. Yeah, and it doesn't look like he's going to do what Retribution players want him to do.
I just wanted him
makes me happy.
To be
like
cat-
fix stealth.
All I wanted him to do was just be Captain Maxwell Finn and cost 2 points instead of three and lose a bajillion of his bonus rules, like yeah, tough. And
doesn't look like he's going to have veteran leader. It looks like all he does is Grand Fearless, and himself is somewhat of a combat solo.
Wait. Fearless is really good, though.
Not in that faction.
I wonder if he's going to have the rally.
It is when you're playing against Epic Butcher.
Sure.
Butcher 3, you mean. Why isn't it good in that faction?
Because they're all Command 9 and 10 with rerolls.
Yeah, everything in that faction has
a thing. I mean, talking to Danny this weekend, like, he's made it seem like fear was a big, big, big problem.
You know how it is when you miss those.
It's nice for, because Modesto and I were talking a while back when I was playing Rhett, about taking two units of Halberdiers with no UAs. Because if you compare them to, like, Steelheads, they do roughly about the same amount of work and are roughly as equally difficult to kill. But the problem is they're only command, like, 7 without eight. The or 8 without the UA.
I think so.
And so we were just like a hellfire crap or something. So it's nice to like
it opens up some new options, which is fine.
So Venithrax just owns them then.
Yeah, that quad legit quad hellfire laser.
hellfire machine gun.
Sorry
whoever.
Sorry Dylan.
They're never going to let it go. He still sends me Facebook messages. He's like, they got me again. he's like, at least this wasn't as bad as the expletive butt hurting that happened the previous podcast.
It's like, too much comedy gold. We can't give it up.
You can't stop. You have to stop making it so much fun for us. I mean, that's my advice. I mean, if you don't want it to happen, you just gotta make it not fun.
Feed me.
So do you think he's gonna have rallying point though? That rule from the standard from the tyrant commander?
I mean, if he does fearless for the whole like Spectra.
It's just House Guard.
He's gonna be much more useful, but it looks like it's just gonna be like inspiration House Guard. Kind of a dealio.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which
that's pretty good.
And usually you don't see more than one unit of House Guard?
Yeah, it's usually one unit of Halberds.
Unless, are the Battle Mages?
The Battle Mages are not.
They're not House Guard.
House Guard. I would
personally
like Shaiul.
I would personally like it if he was a veteran leader. But
yeah, you might see the Riflemen more often, which are pretty decent, I think.
I thought, all the House Guard have ranked attacks, so it wouldn't be that hard for...
I don't remember if I talked about this on the podcast, but the reason I was hoping he'd be just Maxwell Finn is because he's like the House Guard solo, so he needs to do something for both units without breaking one of the units, you know, completely.
Sorry. Desperate Pace might be a little strong on the Halbs.
That's what I was thinking, but I, you know... I wouldn't know until playtesting it, because it could be fine.
It could be.
I was thinking it might get a little over the top with, like, Ossian, because then
13
they
inches
walk
in shield wall is...
Right. But he wants to shoot a lot, so it kind of, like, isn't as good as that. I don't know.
I mean, this guy's meant to be, like, the reflection of an Iron Fang Kovnik or the Stormguard guy, right? It's supposed to be, like, a combat
He's
solo
in that
to boost
He's in the same
some
thing.
Infantry of some sort.
Maybe we're getting another Bane solo.
Nope.
You got your plastic box. Just enjoy it.
You'll probably... No, you know what you're getting.
A stupid Scarlet Commander.
Yeah.
That's a unit attachment. That's not a solo.
Yeah, it's going to make Mechthralls amazing. It's gonna make them cost 3 more points for no reason.
No, you're going to get another Satixis solo that gives them even more speed.
It's just like it's be a Desperate Pace and Super Quick Mode.
Yeah. The power's called What's It Like in Their Deployment Zone.
That's good.
Granted, Apparition. This takes us.
They could have, like, what?
No, no.
Doesn't Krix already have, like, a solo for every one of their, like,
No,
units?
It'll be like, it'll give them Mark 1 advanced deployment.
Pretty much.
Oh, no, you'll get a solo. Oh, no, Brengrave.
Mark 1 advanced deployment. That would be awful. Yeah. 12 inches?
It'll be 12 inches up.
Keith's epic Denegro list is just getting more and more glorious.
And they can have that old rule that increases field allowance.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Why not? It's Krix. Just go hog wild.
I mean, how many Satixis Raiders is too many Satixis Raiders?
Yes.
One.
I don't know. Raiders don't bother me as much as they used to.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah. Being able to light them on fire would be sweet if I could do it in my faction. Oh, wait, I can.
I wanted to give you crap for
Battle Engine,
but you've played too many games lately. That was a valid avenue.
Yeah, I know, right? Like, it's weird that you can't make fun of me for not playing games.
You know why?
Like 14 games.
You know why he's been playing so many games?
Because these guys left the country.
No, it's because you didn't have to unpack and repack your models. They just sit at your house on a table.
Yep.
And then someone comes in and you're like, want to play a game? All my stuff's deployed.
It's pretty genius, actually.
That's why he's losing some of his games. It's because he can't be bothered to switch lists to the one that's better.
that actually did happen.
It's like playing against Denegra. Oh, God. High Reclaimer's like 3 feet away. Epic Sevy it is.
So the next time Colin comes...
Scourge, no, I'm dead.
The next time Colin wants to play a game with you, we need to be like, okay, Colin, here's the list that he had out on his table the last time we were there. Like,
it's net deck it.
No, go to town.
I don't think Colin liked how Epic Sevy treated him.
No, he did not. Colin took a PX Eris list with like 2 units of Gators against Epic Sevy. You can imagine how that game
wah,
went.
Wah, wah, wah. See, when I took my medium infantry against John, I zombified them.
That was actually a really good tech. Taking over all the Gatormen, though, made him really sad. And then Fear of God in the other unit. So he was just like, okay. We walk forward.
Did all the Gators like run up to a Reckoner and turn around so they didn't get unyielding? And then bonk, 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 they all died.
Pretty much.
Nice. It's good times.
Indeed.
Yep. It was pretty fun.
Colin could have almost done like the most amazing thing in that game with Xeris, which was start the chain, kill a bodyguard, have that bodyguard kill the other bodyguard, and then have that bodyguard kill
Rovan.
It's a pretty good start.
It would have been sweet.
It's pretty good.
God, it would have been great. But I just wanted to see a bodyguard kill the guy he is guarding.
Great Bears do that. God, Great Bears would be the best for that.
Yeah, because they're all in base to base right away.
They murder the crap out of
each
other.
They do murder the hell out of each other.
If only Backswing could accidentally hit themselves, it would be the best. Like, the last one's like, Backswing on that guy, kill him, whack, murder myself. That would be amazing.
He just, like, trips and falls on the ass.
They don't get a backswing on the feet, dude.
No. Yeah. Oh, no, not on Hexy's feet. It's a normal.
Not on Hexy's feet.
Keith was just saying, in general, it would be sweet.
I was mix and matching with Severius, who can't even target them with his feet.
Right.
Who would get to backswing.
You crazy boy.
Because my stupid Reeves were aiming and killing two other Reeves when they got taken over, and I was kind of irritated.
Take over a Reeve and a War Dog? Oh, you can't take over a War Dog.
Can't take over a dog.
No, I took over Reeves, and then I was in his back arc aiming with Snapfire.
That's pretty good.
It was pretty sweet.
That's
gonna
amazing, actually. And they have hunters, so they ignore camouflage.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
Mate, can you actually get aims with a Severius's feet?
Yeah, it's a solo.
It's a solo.
It just activates like normal.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
It is.
We found out they don't gain fearless, and I scared one of my former blood trackers.
So yeah,
and almost another one
when it comes back. Hmm? Is it still scared when it comes back into your command, into your control?
Yeah, probably so.
Yeah, I would think so.
That's
although
interesting,
that's so weird though because it was fleeing from his guys, and then now it's like okay, now I'm on your team again, and I'm still fleeing.
This is completely non sequitur, but Valkyne, aka Stu. From the great country of Ireland.
Are you sure it's Stu?
Go to hell. Told me one of the most hilarious rules gaffes I've ever heard, which is that the way that beguile is worded on the night troll is completely effed up right now. Because it's worded, what is it? It's like a model.
I'm pulling it up.
It's like a model... that begins its activation within a unit like affected by Beguile or whatever must move towards the nearest unit with Beguile. So if they begin their activation and then kill, if they begin their activation within 5 inches of the Night Troll and then kill it, and then have more movement,
sprint or ride by or light cav,
and your Warcaster also has Beguile but is on the other side of the table, they still have Beguile, so they have to move towards. Your Warcaster, then. Because they started their activation within 5 inches of a model with Beguile, so they still have to move towards the nearest model with Beguile.
Oh, that's really,
really
cool.
Stupid.
Yeah.
Wow. I don't think it's useful. Like,
no,
it's just,
I mean, it's so corner case,
it's
but...
It's really weird
bizarre.
And dumb.
I mean, that's really what that is that's just like Summon Judge.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
If that ever happened in an actual tournament game, you're like, no, you actually have to move towards my Warcaster.
Kind of
you're 20 inches away. Yeah, well, read Beguile.
What's the definition of a grunt?
A grunt? I don't know.
Is it non-character? Because, like...
Yeah.
It is
going to be... grunts are listed on the card if they're in the unit. It will say leader and X grunts. So grunts are non-leader models.
Right. I knew that for sure. I just
said character.
Yeah. Well, Nate Capney could have been looking at that for something. I can't remember why, but we were talking about what is a grunt model and what isn't, because it was a feat or something that specifically mentioned a grunt.
Asphyxia is his feat. Now specifies grunts.
Okay.
So does Ibex Evies, right?
Yeah.
It just specifies grunts, but it doesn't specify non-character. So I was curious if...
I do not believe guys in three-man character units are specified as grunts.
No. They are not.
Well, they're all named.
But they are troopers, so you can bring them back with Reclaimer. But...
Oh, that's really good.
Especially after you've triggered Battle Driven, so you're just like, sweet, these guys are Power 13 Weapon Masters, I get to place and charge Matt 8.
If I went to Menoth, back to Menoth, I would play all the like models that have the, you damaged me, I get something sweet, and then just play them with Harbies. They'd just be like, ha-ha, suck it.
Troopers are, I think troopers are any non-officer member of a unit, pretty much.
Right.
Non-officer, non-leader.
Non-leader as well?
If only
Maybe not, I guess.
If only the Knight's Exemplar buff stayed when you brought the guys back.
Oh, I know. That'd be the best thing ever. Oh, my gosh. That would be so cool.
You kill him down to one, and then he's like, refill the unit. Now they're all POW 20.
Actually, an interaction that actually is pretty cool is the Knight's Exemplar buff. You do get the buff when you RFP them with the Battle Engine. So, like, they kill one.
Huh?
You Doors of Judgment it goes and makes an attack, and then the rest of the unit gets plus one strength.
Huh.
So
that's nice.
It's kind of nice, yeah. Pretty good little synergy.
Knight's Exemplar, pretty good with doors.
Yeah.
Menoth Battle Engine, pretty good, period.
Mm-hmm.
It's by far the best battle engine. I've been saying
that
for 2 years.
You have been saying that for 2 years, John. I'm glad you... God, you son of a...
there's
so bad.
There's no history. They can't check.
Yeah, okay.
Harp.
We're running out of steam.
We are.
How much time we got?
It's about 50 minutes in.
Oh.
Minus the... 15
No, it's 57 minutes, but I figure we had some pre-ramble, so...
There was some pre-ramble. That was a pretty good episode, though. We talked about some War Machine, talked about some other stuff. We'd like to thank you for listening to this episode of Muse on Minis and want to remind you to tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for more analysis and commentary from John, Keith, Chad, Crump, and the rest of the crew. For more Muse on Minis, visit us on Facebook or check us out on Twitter at Muse on Minis. And don't forget, we're also at museonminis.com with tons of great articles about the hobby we all love.
All right. Well, thank you for tuning in to episode 112 of Muse on Minis. This has been John.
Lance.
Coderump.
Chad.
And Keith.
Check in the flip.
Is it bad that I only want to play Diablo 3 for the cutscenes and nothing else?
No, it's a really bad game.
Yeah.
Well, can you turn your mic on?
The first cutscene was bananas awesome.
They look pretty.
Yeah.
And then they go through a terrible story.
And then the second cutscene, I started it and I'm just like, wait, this is the preview for the game. This is the commercial.
The one where, what's his name, is talking to Leah?
Yeah.
Who's actually Diablo. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Obviously. She's Diablo whole time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
By the way, I can't hear you guys, and I couldn't figure it out at first. Can you see the problem?
Yeah.
Yes.
But,
can you hear your iPad?
No.
That's his telephone.
Ta-da!
That second cutscene pissed me off so much, because I was like, this is the commercial! This is literally the commercial!
Well, the commercial was that cutscene. It's not like they reused
it. Yeah, I know. It's just, I was just like, God damn it. This is lame.
Mm-hmm.
They should have used the first cutscene.
You get mad about the most random cutscenes. Doesn't he? Like, he gets so angry. Yeah. You're just like, what else are they doing? You're angry?
You think they should have used Cain's funeral as the first?
No, just like the angel battle.
Spoiler alert, Deckard Cain dies.
Deckard Cain!
I was thinking about a cool
identify items for you at no charge.
I was thinking of a cool concept that would be like Deckard Cain and Gandalf having an argument, and it would just be the two people doing the voices,
oh my God.
And it would sound almost exactly the same, but they would try to distinguish between the two of them.
They wouldn't have had to spoil Deckard Cain dying. They could have just been like, yeah, like you've ever had to sacrifice anything, and then it like Tyrael touches her, and then like that could have been the scene. But like at that point,
if we're gonna pre-ramble, talk
show.
Into your mic.
What, this is a pre-ramble? I didn't know we were recording.
Of course we are.
Got it. Oh, man. We need a writer to get on this, because it would be like Deckard Cain and Gandalf, and then like in the middle of it, like Dumbledore would come in.
Right.
What in the hell are you talking about?
Just a bunch of old wizards all hanging out saying roughly the exact same things in the exact same accent because they sound so close. And they could do hip-hop lyrics for all we could care, and it would be fantastic.
Possibly the thing that annoyed me the most. Leah's character was so frustrating. She's like, oh, uncle, you're so crazy talking about demons and all these things. Meanwhile, the undead are, like, mobbing the town.
Yeah.
Like, how...
Demons are much more crazy than undead.
That was
how
exactly...
can you possibly be a skeptic in this world?
You just exactly paraphrased a Penny Arcade comic.
That's actually... Yeah, I do remember that one.
Yeah, she's like, uncle, you're crazy. And then she stops halfway to, like, go, yeah, and, like, kill a zombie. And, like, turns around, like, now stop with your stupid stories.
Not to get sidetracked too much, but I'm now on book 9 of the Dresden Files, and I'm very much enjoying that series.
No spoilers.
Is 9 White Knight?
Yes.
Yeah.
No spoilers.
How
I
many
just started re-listening to the audiobooks.
Yeah.
Yes, currently 4. It will expand to 5,
okay.
Like the previous did.
I'm just like, wait, so then I'm going to go to this, like, mountain and then fight this demon. Also, the boss fights are the Stone Cold Forest.
How so?
They're just too easy.
So we're going to swear to, like...
It's the pre-ramble!
Yeah, I have to still cut it if I'm going to use it for anything.
Oh. I don't know, like, I just... The only time I've died is when, like,
oh,
there
God,
were so many
chocolate.
Things on the screen that I couldn't see my character.
I hate way too much chocolate. Oh, God, no. Take it away.
A little bit of that chocolate goes a long ways, too.
Yeah.
It's amazing, but it is very potent.
Excellence.
Noir intense. Mm.
No, I have very slim hopes that the expansion will turn that into a playable game.
Okay, so the third act is like the volcano or whatever.
It's
And then
it's
the fourth act is just like you in heaven or something.
Yes, it's fighting through the angelic realm.
Yeah.
The high heavens, I believe.
Yeah.
Bleh.
Yeah, it's pretty lame when
in Act
I, like,
three,
am
you
able
have to, listen...
to predict the entire story.
In Act 3, you have to listen to the what's-his-name, the demon, be like, this is my plan. How can you possibly... You can't possibly stop me. And then he's like, oh, you stopped me. This is my next plan. There's no way you'll stop this one.
Yeah, no. It was
You just exactly paraphrased the chainsaw suit comic.
I actually thought it was pretty dumb where at the end of Act 2, they show, like... The demon talking to Leah, and he's like, here's my exact plan, and you'll never stop me, but here are all the painstaking details of my plan. And then she's like, hey, we gotta go to this place so we can stop him. I was just like, demons are stupid. It's like, really
when
stupid.
When did Diablo become a cartoon villain?
Yeah, right? Like, yes, exactly.
And then you get to Act 4 or whatever, and Tranny Diablo appears, and you're like, okay... and then he goes through all his crappy exposition explaining all of his plans, too. And it's just like, why? Why? Why are they doing this?
The entire time I was running through Act 2, all I was thinking of was just I had Aladdin songs going through my head.
You know what I was thinking the entire
Arabian
time I was going
nights,
through Act
2? Arabian days. That.
No.
Was like, oh, damn it.
It was actually War Machine, the thing that we should talk about.
Oh, we're still pre-rambling. I did want to make one point. You know what I decided the other day is the difference between Dresden and George R.R. Martin is?
Well, there are lots of them.
Spelling?
But what did you observe?
When George R.R. Martin kills somebody,
mm-hmm.
It crushes my soul.
Yeah?
Like, bad. Like, when Ned Stark died, spoiler.
I already did that one.
You can't spoiler
yeah, he did.
After you.
Right. I was serious.
Snape kills Dumbledore, spoiler.
My entire soul was crushed. When Dresden kills somebody that I care about, I'm so pissed off. I'm just angry. Like, why did you kill this character? I love this character. You're just...
Oh, God.
Yeah, I forgot that the... No, spoilers. Never mind.
No, I have to show you guys spoilers. This. You'll...
Spoilers. I forgot that Carmichael dies in the second book. And I was like, oh.
Yeah. Right? It just makes you angry.
But, like that, but then the thing is, like, 20 pages later, you're just kind of like, you don't even remember. Right. You're just like, whatever.
You've read the fifth book, though, right?
No.
Before? You've not listened?
I've gotten to four.
Oh. So I can't... Nobody dies in the fifth book. Don't worry about it.
Nobody at all.
Yeah. It's fine.
Nobody named Susan?
In the first and second Diablos. Diablo himself says a grand total of, I believe, 8 words. 8 words.
Sure.
And is... like an imposing and terrifying villain.
Right.
In the third game, he says like a jillion words, and he's like, you're boring me.
Because you've beat him so many times. You're used to kicking his ass all over the place.
I'm sure you guys enjoy Game of Thrones, and I found this, what I thought was somewhat amusing, thread the other day while I was bored at work. And it is Game of Thrones characters if they were video game consoles.
If they were the console themselves.
Right, so like, so which nice ones...
Dreamcast. Boosh, nailed it.
So, Joffrey is the Wii. He rules the land, but many seek to defy him. Has broad reach, but not much respect. Sansa is the PlayStation 3. Bold and naive, thinks everyone will love her because of her noble bloodline.
You're losing me.
Yeah, you guys suck.
Interesting, George R. Martin, in fact, he taught in Dubuque at Clark College. He taught, like, journalism at 1976, like 2 years before I was born. He lived in Dubuque. He taught in Dubuque. I had no idea. It was on his blog. I was like, oh, I know where that is. I know where that school is.
That's
for those
amazing.
That by. But he was in Iowa for a while.
Dubuque is the town right on the border with Wisconsin.
Northeast
right?
corner, yep.
Yep.
Yarp.
I drive through there.
I do, too.
Dubuque.